Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Welcome to this episode of Inside Austin, your local show dedicated to all the good work being done in the Central Texas area. I'm your host, Brian Fitzgerald. You can follow the show on Twitter at Inside Austin, and you can follow me at BFitzRadio. If you know of an organization or an individual who is making a difference or an event that helps the community and should be recognized, send us a DM on Twitter, or you can email us at InsideAustin@Audacy.com. That's InsideAustin@AUDACY.com. As you know, October is Breast Cancer Awareness Month. Breast cancer is more than just races and 4Ks, and it's more than just wearing pink. Breast cancer is the second deadliest cancer among women, but most commonly diagnosed. 1 in 3 cancer diagnosis for women is a breast cancer diagnosis. In the U.S., 1 in 8 women will be diagnosed with invasive breast cancer during their lifetime. In the U.S., in 2022, over 280,000 women and almost 3,000 men are expected to be diagnosed with invasive breast cancer. Also in 2022, breast cancer is expected to claim the lives of almost 44,000 men and women in the U.S. In Texas in 2022, an estimated 20,000 new cases of female and male breast cancer are expected, with almost 3,400 deaths. A woman's risk nearly doubles if she has a mother or a sister or a daughter diagnosed, but still 85% of cases are someone who does not have a family history. Breast cancer is chemotherapy. It is losing hair. It is fear. It is worry. It is depression. Breast cancer is also a journey into the unknown and uncertainty. Today we are going to have a frank and honest conversation about breast cancer. We are blessed to have as our guest today, Sherry Thomas from Breast Cancer Specialists, which is a part of Texas Oncology. And we are also joined by Kim Mosier, who is a breast cancer survivor, who has kindly agreed to share her story. So now, just to be clear, nothing you hear is to be interpreted as medical advice or to be taken beyond just general information. If you have any questions about the subject matter, or more importantly, any questions about your health, please, I urge you to speak to your doctor or nurse practitioner, or to a healthcare professional. We are simply telling you a story of one patient and their experiences with breast cancer and one of the doctors that treated her. You can find more information and link to resources on our Twitter page and on this station's website. Joining us on this segment of Inside Austin is Dr. Sherry Thomas, who is an FACS Fellow, American College of Surgeons. And basically what that means is that she's a surgeon, and specifically she is a cancer surgeon. We also have on Kim Mosier, who is a breast cancer survivor and a former patient of Sherry's. Now, I want to start with you, Dr. Thomas, real quick, because I want to get into the clinical side of things before we bring in Kim here to talk about the personal side of things. And that's, you know, I just read some statistics about breast cancer and the impact that it has on women, and I guess men to a certain extent, too. I mentioned the handful of cases of breast cancer in men yearly. I wanted to get into those a little bit deeper, not necessarily break up the statistics or anything like that, but talk about the subjects behind the statistics, which are something as simple as, you know, what is cancer and the definition of it.
Yeah, cancer is essentially when the cells in our body that are normal and should be there start essentially behaving badly. And when that happens, their job is to essentially grow. And as it grows, for breast cancer, for instance, it creates a mass.
And my understanding is one of the issues with breast cancer specifically is its proximity to lymph nodes, and that's why it spreads.
Yes, exactly. So most breast cancer will spread through the lymphatic channels to the lymph nodes. And then, of course, if it's allowed to continue to grow, it will continue to spread outside of the lymph nodes.
And that's when, you know, it goes from something that's treatable to something that you are essentially just mitigating circumstances to.
Exactly. And that's why detecting cancer early is so critically important, especially early on, before a mass can be felt and before it has a chance to spread outside of the breast.
As a cancer doctor and somebody who deals with this literally as for a living, what is your work like? What is, you know, I don't want to say run us through a typical day because that sounds like a cliched question, but at the same time though, you know, what is a kind of your industry standard day?
Yeah. So I'm a breast surgeon. So I do the surgical treatment of women with breast cancer, which essentially all that means is that typically patients will come to see me first. So oftentimes I'm the first person telling them that they have breast cancer. And so a lot of it is really walking patients through what next steps look like. As you can imagine, most patients are a little shell-shocked and aren't really processing what's being said after they hear the words, you have breast cancer. So a lot of it is just really education, helping them to process the information they've been given, and really trying to make things as easy as possible for them. I mean, this truly is, for most women, the worst thing they've ever gone through in their life. And so really just making sure that they have a full understanding of what's happening next and making it, you know, as easy as a process as we can is really our goal.
Now, I want to actually get into more of that in just a second, the exact, you know, sort of the timeline of a cancer diagnosis. But I also wanted to get to more of background of cancer itself and breast cancer specifically. There are different kinds of breast cancer. This is a group of cancers. What are the different kinds?
Yeah. So the most common kind of breast cancer arises from the ductal tissue within the breast. And the second most common is what we call lobular cancer. And then there are a whole array of other cancers that we would consider fairly rare breast cancers.
My understanding is 85% of women who are diagnosed with cancer, they don't have a family history of it. However, if you do have a family history with a mother, daughter, or other close relative along those lines, your risk go up dramatically.
And that's actually one of the sad misconceptions of, I would say, a great majority of patients that I meet is patients feel like if they don't have a family history, that they don't have a high risk of getting breast cancer or even an elevated risk of getting breast cancer. So I know this wasn't exactly your question, but this is a little bit of my cautionary. Women really, really should seek out from either their primary care doctor or a specialist to evaluate what is your real risk, to get the best care possible, really.
Well, and that's the most important part, is getting the best care possible under the circumstances that you're in.
Exactly.
Not just family history, but also race and age factor in. You know, probably the biggest factor is obviously is being a woman. But besides that, you know, race and age factor in.
Certainly, it's an important factor. You know, in women under 40, African-American women are more likely to develop breast cancer. And so it's really important that women understand how their particular ethnic background really factors into their risk. And that's just all part of the bigger picture that I say, when you really need to understand your risk, there's so many facets that are a part of that evaluation, that it's just really, really important to understand your personal risk and how the factors that you can change and can't change. Like, to your point, being a woman, you can't biologically change your breast cancer risk if you're born as a woman. Same way you can't really change your ethnicity. And so those factors are super important when we're evaluating risk.
As far as risk is concerned, I guess genetic testing is the best way to preemptively be aware of what your risks are. Searching for the BRCA 1 and 2 gene.
Yeah, and nowadays, typically, when we talk about genetic testing, we are definitely checking for BRCA1 and BRCA2, but there's been several other genes that are associated with increased risks of breast cancer. So typically nowadays, depending on your family history and your family history of cancer, we're actually typically testing for more than just the BRCA1 and BRCA2 mutation, which is also important, because there are tests that are available commercially that, you know, test for only very specific things. And so I will say, I do think it's important to really seek out either a professional that does genetic testing, or even a genetic counselor that can really guide you through what is the appropriate testing for you based on your family history. Because there is more than just the BRCA1 and BRCA2, but they have a significantly elevated risk of not only getting a first breast cancer, but they also have an elevated risk of getting additional breast cancers after a primary breast cancer, and that can happen in either breast at any time. And so that's also a super important aspect of having those genetic mutations.
This is when I expose myself as a radio DJ versus a doctor. Is there a difference between like getting cancer once and then getting the same cancer a second time? Is that getting cancer once, or did you get cancer twice?
So that is a great question. And it's not a very straightforward answer. So there are some women that will get a cancer recurrence, which basically means the same cancer came back in the same breast or same location or same type of cancer. But there are women that will get a second type of breast cancer. And usually we're able to figure out whether it's a recurrence or a second breast cancer. But there are cases where it's very difficult to tell the difference for sure.
I would like to actually get into the sort of a timeline of, you know, somebody who has a suspicion that they have cancer and, you know, go and meet with a doctor. And from that point, you know, I'm not looking for like lengths of time, because I know that that's different from case to case as far as severity of cancer and the health of the person who has been diagnosed and things like that. I'm more talking about the, you know, the step-by-step process that somebody has to go through once they have a sneaking suspicion that something is wrong.
Our goal is that we would detect it before it can be felt in a woman, which is a very important aspect, which is why we focus so much on breast screening. Because really, if you can catch a cancer while it's contained within the breast, before you can feel it, before it's had a chance to spread, that really is the best prognosis for any woman. Now, once there is a suspicion, whether it be a mammogram or you feel something, obviously getting it checked out by a professional, either your primary care doctor, your gynecologist, you know, a breast cancer specialist, whoever, getting it checked out immediately is probably the most critical thing, not waiting. And depending on, you know, how it's detected, usually a needle biopsy is the next step. And then when we find the information of from the needle biopsy and we find out that it is breast cancer, like I mentioned, finding out the type and the tumor markers becomes really important. Then that really dictates next steps, meaning is surgery first, is chemotherapy first, what treatments are available to any woman and in what order they happen. And so all that information is very critical. And to your point earlier, the question you asked about different types of breast cancer, those different types sometimes can have very different treatment plans. And so just getting that information as quickly as possible so that that plan can really start is pretty much the most important part of any cancer diagnosis.
Not to make things overly succinct or anything like that, but it seems like time you waste after suspicion is time you lose at the end.
Yes. And that's hard, because I will tell you this too. There, most things that women feel in the breast, especially younger women, are not going to be breast cancer. But we always just caution people, if you feel something, just get it checked out. Let us be the ones to tell you that it's benign or that it's not cancer. Don't just assume because you're young or you don't have a family history that it's not cancer. And so that's really the most critical part, because I think that's where people do sort of not ignore things, but they just assume that they're not cancer. And then, you know, time goes by to your point. And time really is, you know, getting things done as quickly as possible when it comes to a cancer diagnosis is critical.
We are talking to Dr. Sherry Thomas from Texas Oncology, texasoncology.com. She is a fellow American College of Surgeons, breast cancer surgeon. She is somebody who goes in and literally carves out tumors. Pardon me for oversimplifying your job, but that is. And I would like to bring on here Kim. I mentioned her earlier, Kim Mosier, who is a patient and a cancer survivor who was a patient of yours.
Hi, Kim. How are you?
Hey, good. How are you?
I'm so good. It's so good to hear your voice.
I know. I was going to jump in when you started talking earlier. I was like,
I know.
I would like to take that timeline, that step-by-step that we just talked about. And Kim, if you don't mind, I would like to talk the personal level of that now. When you had your suspicion, when you did decide to see a doctor and the process that went through, but this on an emotional level versus the clinical level.
Sure. And so I will say, as a woman or anyone, you know your body, and it is early detection that saves your life. And so if you know that something is off in your heart of hearts, then you have to go get it checked out, and because it can save your life. And then based on what Sherry had said, the whole, once you're diagnosed, it is just shell shock, and you do just block everything out. You don't know what to think. You just want everyone to make the decisions for you because you just feel like everything's been stripped away. So going in and having a team of doctors that you feel comfortable with, and you know that you're going to fight together, they're going to give you that strength. That's what you're looking for.
Now, Dr. Thomas, on your end of that, when you are sitting down with the cancer patient for the first time and having to give them the worst news of their lives, and you do understand that they are about to have a profound reaction to it, you know, I don't know if it's right to ask you of what your personal impact is in an emotional level is. So I will just ask, as a doctor, you know, how do you go about sitting that person down?
I will say it's never, ever lost on me that when you meet someone for the first time with that diagnosis, that it is truly, most of the time, the worst thing that's ever happened to them. And so I try to just always remember that as I'm talking to somebody, and just really try to put myself in their position. What would I want to hear? What would I want? What information would I want? What's the timing of that? How would I want to be walked through that process? And so I think I just am constantly trying to think of where that person's at and come from that angle. And so I think that's the hard part, right? Because you sometimes get lost in your own, what you need to say and information you needed to deliver. But it's a good reminder to just always keep that person in front of you all the time. I mean, they're a person. This is going to dramatically impact their life forever. I mean, it's just never lost on me.
And I would have to agree with her. It is not lost on her.
Good doctors make the biggest difference in this world when it comes to having to navigate some sort of a health crisis. And that's something that I think is lost a little bit in the medical community, is the importance of a, not just a bedside manner, but a respect for the fact that this is still a person. I think that I unfortunately have spent a little time in emergency rooms due to some rather careless mistakes. And mm-hmm. You find emergency room doctors don't treat you like a person. You know, you are, yeah. Get them in, get them out, so that way we can get somebody in that bed. And it's hard when you know, let alone have broken something. I can't imagine getting a life-altering diagnosis such as cancer. So I think that is something that is, you know, worth mentioning and certainly worth applauding is the fact that you did have a good doctor through this.
Absolutely. Because it makes all the difference.
I would imagine it makes it easier for you to be able to take each individual step, knowing that you've got literally an expert on your side, as opposed, you know, yeah, it's great to have your family and they're there for emotional support and everything, but you know, Dr. Thomas knows what she's talking about and knows the subject matter better than any of us ever will.
Yes. And then when they take it down and explain it on a level where you can actually understand it, knowing what you're going through, it really does. It eases your mind just a little bit to know that you have this team and they are going to do everything in their power to save your life.
Now, what was that like? What was the, you know, you've now sat down with the doctors, you've gotten the worst news that you could possibly imagine. What was the rest of the process like? You know, everybody equates chemotherapy with cancer treatments and losing your hair and being very, very sick to your stomach and things like that. But what was it, just, you know, not even on a physical level, what was it like on an emotional level to have to go through this?
I tell you what, it's the weirdest thing. So I was almost embarrassed at first. Like, what did I do wrong? What is this my punishment for? I just can't wrap your head around it. Like, you hear of people getting diagnosed, but then when it actually hits you, it's just this whirlwind. You don't know what to think, what to do. And I think the not knowing is the absolute hardest part. You just feel like you're in limbo. And that was one thing that was awesome, is that my team, they were so quick to jump on getting me in, you know, getting my port placement, getting my chemo started. And once you start that, even though it does make you sick, you at least feel like you're fighting it. You are doing something to save your life. And I will say, you made the comment about the losing of the hair and everything. That in itself was really one of the hardest realizations that I had to face. When I was first diagnosed, that was my biggest concern. Like, was I going to lose my hair? I'm a mom of three. My youngest had just turned two when I was diagnosed. And so I could hide a lot of my illness, but not your hair. When I had to shave my head, that was a really, really hard day. It was Easter Sunday of 2016. I'll never forget it.
I've heard other women discuss that exact same thing, that the thing that bothered them most wasn't necessarily the treatments and stuff like that. It was losing their hair. The loss of femininity is what I kept hearing when it was referenced to that. And, you know, I'm a bald guy, so I have no idea how, you know, I started losing my hair at a very young age. So I leaned into it and have had a shaved head for quite some time. And I, you know, it is literally something I cannot comprehend. But at the same time, though, I can see 100%, because it's not that it's like somebody just being particularly proud of your hair. That's not what I'm talking about. It is a marker for all to see.
Yes.
And I would imagine that in itself is hard to deal with, let alone the fact that it is, as I said, you know, the thing I heard the most whenever I hear a woman reference it is the loss of their femininity. They don't feel like a woman anymore because of that.
Correct.
I think that that's one of the more unique things as far as cancer and how it affects a woman is the you know, the physical things. Obviously the cancer, yes, but the physical things that end up coming afterwards as a result of either treatment or the fact that your body has betrayed you as much as it has.
Sure. No, absolutely. And my biggest thing was, especially for my kids, is I wanted to protect them from it. I did not use the word cancer in front of them. Someone else finally did, but because I didn't want my boys to be scared. I did not need them to fear losing me. And so I wanted to protect them from that. And I knew once I lost my hair, there was no going back. And I never wanted like their friends or anyone to just look and be like, oh, what's wrong with your mom? I always wanted to try and maintain normalcy through it. And I didn't use the word cancer because I didn't feel as though, first off, did I know for certain what was going to happen and what the end result was going to be? And I didn't know how to fully explain it to them, but I didn't need them going to school and saying something, oh yeah, I heard your mom has cancer. And then a kid says, oh, my grandmother or my grandfather died of cancer. Well, maybe their grandmother or grandfather had a different type, or maybe they had it 20 years ago and they passed away of old age, but that's just what they associated it with. So I did try to protect them. That was my biggest concern.
One of the things that I always hear when somebody does get some sort of a cancer diagnosis or something that is going to affect their health in possibly a fatal way is they end up taking care of the people around them, sometimes even more so than they end up taking care of themselves. They want to make sure that the people around them aren't uncomfortable with the fact that they have to go through this. And, you know, I think the biggest example of that is always when a mother is trying to protect her kids. Because, you know, she doesn't want them to know that mommy is that fragile.
Yes, that is true.
Well, we are joined by Kim Mosier, who is a patient and cancer survivor. You are cancer-free. That is so worth bringing up and celebrating. Congratulations on that.
Thank you. Thank you. It has been a journey.
And we are also talking to Dr. Sherry Thomas, who is a breast cancer surgeon at Texas Oncology. TexasOncology.com is their website if you'd like any information. We only have a few minutes here before we wrap up, and I wanted to get in with both of you as far as things are concerned, as far as treatments specifically. Like, you know, you've mentioned chemo a few times. I don't think most people know what chemotherapy is. If you could shed some light on that for us, doctor.
Yeah, so chemotherapy is a systemic treatment, meaning when we talk about breast cancer specifically, we talk about local treatments and systemic treatments. And so local treatments would be sort of my area, which is surgery. That's one of the local treatments we use. And then chemotherapy is a systemic treatment, meaning it's not specifically treating only the breast. It would treat any cancer cells that have spread outside of the breast as well that are related to the breast cancer. And so that's really the big difference between chemotherapy, which is a systemic treatment, versus, you know, say surgery, which is obviously a local treatment. And there's other treatments involved as well.
Sounds like a shotgun blast versus a laser pointer kind of thing. One is to, you know, is a very broad spectrum. One is, you know, going very, very specific to a certain area. Now, what is it that makes everybody so sick when taking chemotherapy? That's the part that I think that most people don't understand. The, you know, once this has been in somebody's system, what the chemotherapy actually does to that system.
So chemotherapy is, and this is a very general representation, just to be clear, because there are very specific treatments that have very targeted therapies and things like that. But essentially, most chemotherapy drugs are targeted for rapidly progressing cells, to make it very simple. And so it affects any cell in the body that may be rapidly reproducing. So a lot of people will have GI complaints because the lining of our GI tract is constantly changing. And there's other things like that, that it can impact and affect. And so that's why you see the hair loss with chemotherapy as well. And so all of those things, those symptoms that we see in patients from the chemotherapy drugs, are from the, you know, the drugs themselves and how they impact those different cells in the body.
Kim, I'd like to get back to you if you wouldn't mind real quick. And that's that, what is your attitude after winning against cancer? You went up against one of the more formidable things in this world and you won. How does that make you feel?
I always say cancer had no idea who it was picking on, the little stubborn one over here. But so I feel as though cancer put me in a group of the absolute strongest women that I've ever been blessed to be a part of. And so now my biggest thing is to help other women. Be a champion for them, help them fight it. I really did try and remain positive throughout my entire treatment. And I do think that that helps. Keeping that positive attitude, going on with your life, don't let it stop you. But since treatment, I've really tried to become active in more cancer groups, warrior groups. I'm always trying to reach out to friends that have been diagnosed and different women that I see on the group and just try and help them. Let them know that it is going to be okay. It's scary right now, but it is going to be okay.
It's going to be okay. That is a great, great place to leave it. I would like to thank both of you for joining us. We have Dr. Sherry Thomas from Texas Oncology, and we have Kim Mosier, who is a patient and a cancer survivor who kicked cancer's butt.
She sure did.
That's something to walk around proud, by the way. That's like people who survive a plane crash. That changes your perspective on everything.
It really does.
Cancer came into my life. I slapped it around and went on with my day.
It slapped me around just a little bit too, but you know what? I got the better of it.